Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
In the southeast and mid-Atlantic states this past week, the big story was, of course, Hurricane Debby. It did cause quite a lot of wind and flood damage. But for agriculture, along Debby's path, that storm was not as damaging as it might have been. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey told us.
That storm took a favorable track, mostly between key ag areas. So, for example, we didn't see any major impacts in Florida's citrus areas. And at the same time, the core of the storm stayed east of a lot of the key southeastern production areas from Georgia into the Carolinas.
Now, Brad is not downplaying the problems Debby caused, but he says, considering how much agricultural havoc that storm might have created,
we did make it through in relatively good shape.
Relatively. Gary Crawford, Washington.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Farmers who experienced losses in 2022 due to almost any natural disaster had until the close of business on Wednesday to apply for the Emergency Relief Program, or ERP, through USDA. That deadline of Wednesday had come 10 months after local Farm Service Agency offices began accepting the applications amid a lawsuit filed by farmers through the Southeastern Legal Foundation and Mountain States Legal Foundation. Now, the farmers argue that USDA and Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack created a system disregarding congressional intent of disaster relief. USDA established a progressive factoring approach, assigning a different payment formula for underserved and non-underserved farmers and ranchers, thus excluding farmers with the most profound losses from receiving representative relief. Now, Vilsack explained that Congress allocated $3.2 billion in funding to cover an estimated $10 billion in uncovered losses. He said legislators gave us 30% of what we needed, and we had a choice of basically doing it the way we did before when we had all the money and the resources to be able to cover all the producers, or provide an opportunity for 80% of the producers to receive slightly more. ERP 2022 covered losses to crops, trees, bushes, and vines due to qualifying calendar year natural disaster events that include wildfires, hurricanes, floods, derechos, excessive heat, tornadoes, winter storms, freeze, smoke exposure, excessive moisture, qualifying drought, and related conditions. Regulatory cost for small farmers in California has skyrocketed between 2007 and 2017 by 795%. Yeah, 795% increase in regulatory cost for small farmers in California. Now, to advocate for small farmers, Shannon Douglas, president of the California Farm Bureau, said they are exploring in depth how the regulations are really hurting small local farms. And despite California's professed support for the farms, the burdensome regulations often push them out of business. For example, a mandate to switch to electric forklifts is already imposing costs many small farms can't afford, and farmers also can't pass on increased costs due to competition with cheaper imports from countries with fewer regulations. What are some of the unintended negative consequences? Well, they come from well-intentioned regulations like the California Farm Bill, water issues, mill assessment increases, and insurance crisis. But despite the challenges, Shannon's passion for advocacy shines through. She says she aims to ensure further generations can continue farming in California, seen through tough times as opportunities for innovation and improvement. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Corn, good to excellent reading for this year, which is represented by the red line, is currently at 67%.
Fleming Gibson is acting director of the crops branch at the National Ag Statistics Service.
And we also, on this chart, display the previous 5 years, and you can compare against that. And if you're for last year, it was 57% for the same time last year. Looking at the maturity of the crop, similar chart is what we just looked at. Focus on the 5 years, the current year's the red line, focusing on the five prior seasons and how we compare against those. And as you can see, we started a little bit earlier this season, but we're back in the normal range. In our table to actually focus on the numbers that we're updating here. So to get a feel for what we're actually, what we're setting for corn, our planted acreage estimate is currently at 90,748,000 acres. That change is down 0.8% from the prior estimate, or about 727,000 acres. Similarly, our harvested estimate is also down about 0.9%, 728,000 acres on that end. Our first yield for the year, this is a record yield at 183.1 bushels per acre. That's up 3.3% from last year, and our overall production estimate at 15.1 billion bushels. So let's look at those numbers in a little more detail. So looking at our corn acreage, as you can see, this includes our updates from today and the prior 10 seasons. There's kind of a peach-colored line that represents our planted line, and then we also have the harvested line, which is in the yellow or gold color. And you can see very similar conditions for our acres that we've seen in the past. So let's look at the yield. For this chart, we compare against the prior 30 years. So looking back at the prior 30 years, we also drafted just a simple trend line across there. And you can see, obviously, at the far right-hand corner is this year's yield. And you can see, obviously, it's the highest that we've had. So that's at the national level. So let's dig into the states a little bit. When we look at the change from previous year for our states, let me walk you through this map a little bit. So there are basically two main colors in the map. There's blue, which is increasing from the previous year. And there's red, which is decreasing from the previous year. These are obviously corn yields and bushels. There's a couple of things to note. The more dark the color, the more significant the change from the prior year. Also, you may notice that there is a pound. If you see a pound sign, that indicates a record high yield. So as we go through the U.S., you know, in addition to the United States yield being a record high, we also are seeing record high yields in Idaho, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Louisiana, Michigan, Nebraska, South Dakota, Washington, and Wisconsin. All right. So where does our corn production end up compared to some of our prior years? So looking through the chart here for our 10 prior years, this will be the third largest production on record. The first or highest would actually be 2023, and then followed by 2016, and this is, like I said, the third largest. How does NASA's forecast compare to industry expectations? The way this chart lays out is each blue dot represents an individual industry expectation that was published, and the NAS estimate is obviously the red, and so we are right in line with the industry expectations today.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
As we think about the economics on our dairy farms, there are some things that may be concerning to you and your operation.
Focusing on economics on a dairy farm, Kansas State dairy specialist, Dr. Mike Brook.
One of those might be the overall margin level on your dairy. You know, one of the ways that we often measure how we're doing in terms of economics on our dairy farms is the milk-to-feed price ratios. And as we look at those ratios, they've been a real challenge, especially the last few years. Even though we had a record milk price in 2022, the actual return on our dairies was not that great due to increased feed prices. We saw low margins on the milk-to-feed ratio in 2023, and that's continued into 2024. although recently that is starting to turn around and look a little more positive for us. We look at what happened in 2023, we only averaged a ratio of about 1.67, which is very low. And currently, we're above 2, but not too far above 2 on that ratio, although it is increasing. As we look into the rest of 2024 and into 2025, we may see an increase in that milk-to-feed ratio due to the fact that feed costs may actually continue to decrease as we look at what's going on in the corn and the soybean markets, and realizing that we may have a very nice crop out in the field. So if that is harvested along with the carryover corn and soybeans that we have in the marketplace, that may help keep feed prices down and actually reduce them from the level that they're at the current time. Are we going to see much of an increase in the price of milk? Well, there may be some increases there, but I think that our largest advantage here on milk-to-feed price ratios will be found in decreased feed costs. Now, as we look at some of the other costs across the dairy industry, we also see some significant changes there. Recently, the Milk Market Administrator in Central Order published some data looking at what has happened since 2011 going through 2023. And as we look at some of those data points, one of the important ones probably to look at would be the cost of production, interest, taxes, and wages. As we look at those four categories, and if we use 2011 as equal to 100 or the base, we see in 2022 and 2023, those indices rose to 139 and 141, what they had been in 2011. So as we look at these things on our dairy farms and we look at our bottom lines, obviously the increase in our production cost as well as wage rates has had a negative impact on our bottom line. When I look at some of the other factors that affect the value of your bottom line on your dairy, one of the things that we often look at is replacement cow costs. And as we look at what's going on in the heifer market today compared to where we're at just a few years ago, heifers have risen significantly. So how do you utilize this information on your dairy farm? Well, number one, as we look at returns, returns are based on level of milk production as well as cost of production and the value that we get for the commodities that we're selling. One of the things that you can control on your dairy is level of production as you work with your dairy herd and try to make improvements to increase the amount of milk that you actually ship off your dairy farm or the amount of milk that you ship per cow on the dairy.
Kansas State Dairy Specialist Mike Brook. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Tony Hotchkiss is the chair of our Agriculture and Rural Bankers Committee at ABA, which I'm proud to say is the second oldest committee at ABA. It's been around for over 100 years.
Ed Elfman is Senior Vice President of Ag and Rural Banking Policy with the American Bankers Association.
Tony was asked to come and testify to talk about the state of the farm economy and the ag economy. What's going on in rural America? And it was really exciting for us to have him there as basically the lender representative. We had a couple producers. One was a corn grower, one was a cotton grower. We had Tony as a lender there. We had an academic there. So it was really nice to have him be part of that discussion. And I think it was very timely to have that hearing happen in Congress, mostly because, you know, we had Farm Bill in May. They had a lot of conversations there and some back and forth, and they always do. But you don't dig into what's really going on and what the ag economy looks like and what we should be watching for. So this hearing was a great opportunity to have those discussions. And talk about, you know, where are we going? What does this look like? When you're talking about a potential 25-27% drop in farm income, that's real. And that's going to affect a lot of rural America across the board. And we really wanted him to have that opportunity to reflect of how bankers feel about that and where we're going. And I'm telling you, it's going to put a margin squeeze on a lot of folks. It really will. So we need to make sure that as lenders, we're on top of what's going on, that we're aware of what's going on. But man, we need things like a farm bill to get done to help us maybe mitigate what some of this downturn could potentially look like.
Now, the House Ag Committee has already passed their version of a farm bill, but it still has to go to the floor for a vote. And then there's the Senate.
Yeah, it's I forget what the exact date is, but I believe we're under 12 total left at this point. And that's always the downside of trying to get a farm bill done in an election year, to be frank. And also, when you get pushed into September, you start running into appropriations, right? You got to fund the federal government. You got to keep that open. I'm not going to go into all the fights going on there on the different appropriations bills that are going through, but you know, it's priority one. Got to keep the federal government open. The interesting thing always with farm bills is that you want to get them done by September 30th so they stay on cycle. But if they don't get done by September 30th, at least USDA can continue to function and loan programs can continue to work. But if that goes past December, now we're in a totally different world. We either got to have an extension or a new farm bill done by the end of the year in order to make sure that we don't have gaps in lending, that we don't have gaps in the commodity programs, you know, when people are trying to sign up for CRP or other conservation programs. So we've got an interesting mix of things going on right now. You know, bold predictions. I don't know if we're going to have much happen on farm bill between now and the end of September. We're always hopeful. Don't get me wrong. And I trust Chairman Thompson's leadership to try to push through something off of the House floor on the House side. Senate side, I mean, they still haven't introduced legislative text. So they have quite a bit of work they'd have to do to even get a farm bill to the Senate floor at this point. So we're kind of up in the air is the best way to put it as we go forward here. But I guess we'll see what the few days in September and then what potentially October, November, and December bring for us.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Shifting over to winter wheat, where we're already into the harvest time frame, kind of tracking the harvest to see what percent harvest we are.
Fleming Gibson breaking down some of the crop production report. He's acting director of the crops branch of the National Ag Statistics Service.
As you can see, and this will show up a little bit later as we in one of the other charts as well, you know, we started out a little early on the harvest, really moved ahead, and then now we've kind of slid back into a kind of normal range. So looking at our winter wheat, comparing the forecast that we set last month, we are down 1% on the acres, on the planted acres, which comes out to be 325,000 acres. For last month, we were down 0.8% for the harvested acres, or 215,000 acres from the previous estimate. Looking at yield's actually up this month. We are up 2.3% from our previous forecast, which is overall increasing production at 1.3 billion bushels. So how do the acres compare? Once again, for the last 10 years, you can kind of see we obviously have the spread between the planted and the harvested. Very normal range for us on that end for the HP side. Looking at our yield, you can see obviously the trend line for yield, above the trend line for yield, but obviously not at the record level that we've had in the past. So this chart or this map is a little bit different because on this map, we're actually looking compared to the previous month. For the other maps that I showed you, they were compared against the previous year. This is against the previous month. So when we compare against the previous month, you can real quickly see quite a few non-changes, no changes, but also quite a few blues, which would be indicative of the increase that we're seeing. So we're also expecting record yields in Michigan, Montana, Oregon, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. This chart is similar, or this map is similar to the other maps that I showed you, which is where we're comparing us to the previous year. You can see, you know, obviously we saw increases through the plains and the Northwest and Wisconsin, Michigan area, other parts a little bit lower. So looking at our winter wheat production, how it lays out against the last 10 years, very in line. It'll be the highest production since 2016. This is kind of what I was alluding to earlier when we were looking at the samples that were processed by our lab and kind of gives you an indication of how harvest is coming in. So as you can see, when you look at the bars for June, you can see we had the highest June that we had had in the last 5 years of samples coming in for mature. We followed that up as well when we got into July And then now if you look at the bar for August, it's very similar to most of the other years. So digging a little bit deeper into those the 10 state region for yield. So on our chart here, we've actually, for the last 5 years, we've plotted the heads per square foot, and we've shown that against the bushels per acre. This is the bushels per acre for the 10 state region, not for the whole U.S. So just to kind of give you an idea of how we're tracking for the year. Looking at winter wheat by class, our hard red winter wheat, we're up 1.6 from last month. Our soft red winter wheat, we're down 0.4 percent from last month. And our white winter wheat, we're up 3.7% from last month. So comparing against industry expectations for winter wheat, it's a very tight range. And, you know, obviously you guys can see there's some points around the NASA estimate. So seems relatively expected today.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
There's been a lot of kind of sentiment out there saying kind of a growing recession, and really a lot of that stuff has trickled into the cattle markets, and just wanted to put a little perspective on that.
Elliot Dennis is a livestock economist, University of Nebraska at Lincoln.
We did have some sell-off, just looking at the October feeder cattle contract. We went from about, 243 to about 240. So we did have some sell-off, but it mainly was middling throughout the week, kind of bouncing up and down. The real sell-off actually happened the week prior on August 1st and 2nd, when a lot of those rumblings about those reports, we actually dropped from 256 to 243 in those 2 days. So huge sell-off on Thursday, Friday. And then this week we've kind of been middling, but really there's just kind of this growing sentiment that maybe consumers are kind of tapping out. And that really was spurred on by the unemployment rate. And we know, funds do have positions in the cattle market for kind of stability. And some of that started to sell off this past week.
And he says at the end of the day, consumers still value beef.
We raise beef because consumers eat beef. And so monitoring kind of what consumers are doing, how much they're willing to pay, what that value is really important. We still know consumers value ground beef. That's been a longstanding claim, and they value ribeyes. One of the big things that we're talking about, herd rebuilding and this kind of contracting, has really been a large pressure on the ground beef market. And we get ground beef from two areas. We get it from lean cattle, which we call 90s or lean 90s, and we get it from fed carcass trimmings, which we call 50s. We blend those generally together to get what we call 80-20 or 80% lean. So that's, we know consumers value that. What we're seeing is that actually what people are willing to pay at retail for ribeyes has weakened, about $1.50. And really kind of highlighting that with higher beef prices has been just this kind of growing consumer debt that's been out there. Consumer debt has risen to about $4.9 trillion, not billion, trillion dollars. And this is non-housing debt. And of that $4.9 trillion, it's a sharp increase to about $1.14 trillion in credit card debt. And that's up from about $707 billion or $0.7 trillion. So almost an increase of $500 million in credit card debt over the last 3 or 4 years. And before this, the conversation was more about, consumers are, rebelling. They're going back out and making all these purchases they get paid in or weren't able to do during COVID. But there's actually some concern now amongst market analysts that this could be actually a growing kind of market situation, that consumers are actually stretched thin and that they're maxing out their credit cards and delinquencies are up. So when that's the case, we know that beef tends to be price sensitive, especially during times of recession. So there is some kind of worry that maybe consumers are signaling that there could be a potential recession. And this is backed up somewhat by Kansas State's Meat Demand Monitor, which really show that, one of the ad hoc questions that they asked this week or this month was, do they think they're spending more on household groceries last month or this time of year or a year ago? And 38% said they were spending more on groceries this year than they were last year. And 20% say they were spending less. So plus 18 say that, that they're in a worse situation grocery-wise than they were last year. So the consumer disposable income is super important. How they choose to allocate that will be important going forward. And ultimately, that has an impact for, ultimately beef production.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Most growing seasons provide us with a lot of suspenseful stories, a lot of drama, but this season, many reporters are faced with this question.
How do we turn no change in condition into an exciting story this week? That's really the bottom line.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says for corn and soybeans, if we were lazy, we could almost get away with just running the same pre-recorded stories this week as we did almost a month ago.
And it shows the power of cool weather during the key reproductive defilling stages of development for corn and soybeans. No change in overall condition this week for both crops.
And it's a pretty good condition report for corn.
67% of the crop, good to excellent. 10% very poor to poor.
And for soybeans, 68% of the crop rated good to excellent condition, 8% poor to very poor. And of course, you guessed it.
No change from last week.
Which is a good thing. USDA said Monday it could lead to the third largest corn crop, the biggest soybean harvest ever. Gary Crawford, Washington.